And good day, everyone. I'm Bernie Miklas, along with Derek Gould, and welcome to the return of the Best Podcast in Baseball, Season 1, Episode 18. We took a little break, not that we really wanted to, but I was on vacation for 10 days, but it took me out of the country basically for two Thursdays in a row, and Derek Gould, after that, was on the road. So, Derek, we weren't able to really pull this off. Now, maybe we could have done one. It would have sounded really crappy, and I don't know.
We're working toward it. We're working on getting the infrastructure in place so that when one of us goes on vacation, because, yes, newsflash, it does happen. We do get to escape the laptop for a little bit, that the BPIB can go on without one of us.
Part of the learning process.
Mainly without me.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. In the winter, you'll be entitled to some time off. You get at least two or three days.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Maybe Christmas Day. Who knows?
Nobody can
guarantee that, though.
It hasn't happened.
Well, gosh, we have so much to talk about. This is probably going to be a long one. We're going to interrupt Derek Gould's chat on STLtoday.com. But let's just start we'll start with something little that gets us into bigger issues. The Cardinals beat Milwaukee 2 out of 3. Thought they did a good job salvaging the series after a bad start Friday night. And I don't know why I sort of wrote about this in today's column. By the way, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. You look at the Brewers, Derek. Mm-hmm. They got off to this great start. They've outscored the Cardinals by 80-some runs. They've hit 111 home runs to the Cardinals, 73. They've gotten 14 more quality starts. Mm-hmm. Their bullpen's not as good, but it's similar. Their run differential is superior. They're one game ahead of the Cardinals. It doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't. They look a lot like the Cardinals of 2013 did when you look at how the numbers line up. You know, I mean, it's the blend and all the facets kind of going. A rather well-rounded team. But you look at Sunday, you're right. I mean, it doesn't compute because, you know, the Cardinals set such lofty expectations for them, and they've taken such a scenic route back into the standings. I mean, they haven't put together the long winning streaks. They haven't had the long losing streaks. They haven't won a whole lot of series in a row, but they haven't lost a whole lot of series in a row. They kind of have mostly played to par. You know, it's like they're hitting the back nine, and they're at par, but they've had to hit their way out of the rough a lot, and they've had to salvage a lot. They had a drop shot at one point. I mean, it's that kind of thing but they're right there. They're still in contention with the back nine to go. It is rather remarkable.
It is, and that's why I say the bird feeders have filled, because it's we all know that so many things have gone wrong, and this isn't a particularly likable team.
Some of which they brought on themselves.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that needs to be said.
I mean, the 29th ranked offense, the starting pitching through really no fault of anyone, because when you suffer some injuries, you're going to have some deterioration. But starting pitching's been shaky. I mean, there's a lot of things going wrong, but yet one game out as we record this. It's pretty, like you said, it's pretty remarkable.
And the division changed dramatically on Sunday. I think, or, you know, we'll see. But I think you can maybe point back to Sunday as the day Garza got hurt. McCutchen's dealing with an injury, so those are two really key components for two contenders. And the Cardinals got a win from Lackey, a key RBI from Pierzynski, and a game-winning RBI from Oscar Tavares. Three players either acquired or directly impacted by that week leading up to the trade deadline.
And I thought that was one of the takeaways of the weekend. We saw Justin Masterson, one of the trade acquisitions, pitch Saturday. No, his pitching line wasn't very good. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you know, he pitched great. He didn't. But, look, I think he's a really talented guy, and you can see why they were attracted to him. Mm-hmm. They're going to basically have to find a way to kind of smooth him out mechanically, because that sinker ball is sailing all over the place. How much do you think that's related to his knee problems, or is it mechanical? John Mozeliak, the GM, believes it's mechanical.
Well, I think one could be part of the other. I mean, you know, it's the same. Like, this is the question that we're going to confront later, not just as a tease, but Alan Craig, you know, is his foot still hurting? Well, no, it's sound, it's fine, but it created bad habits, a distrust in a joint, in a limb, in an appendage, because of injury, is going to alter mechanics. And we've seen that. We saw that with Shelby Miller. Shelby Miller's mechanics would get out of whack, and it would find the weakest spot in his body, that lower back. and it would cause him problems, you know, and one would fuel the other. He would try to compensate for pain in his back by altering his mechanics elsewhere. And, you know, the thought for Masterson coming in, and they said this as they acquired him, was they wondered how much of his mechanics was to compensate for a sore knee, get him healthy, break the bad habits, and get him going again. You know, these are all, it's all part of that kinetic chain that they talk a lot about. If there's an injury, then that's the weakest point, and the rest of the body, be it mechanically or be it at the swing, or, you know, be it a pitcher trying to get his delivery down or a hitter trying to get his swing down, at some point in time the body's going to change so it avoids that pain. And there you have it. That's where mechanics go awry.
So we'll see if he can settle in, but certainly the potential is there. Let's talk about the trades just in terms of before we get into some of the nuts and bolts behind the trade, and did they trade the right guys and all that stuff. That's a separate discussion. But where they stand now, your thoughts on this rotation, which is Adam Wainwright, Lance Lynn, John Lackey, Shelby Miller, Justin Masterson. I don't think there's any question that they have a better rotation after the trades than they did before the trades.
No, they have a rotation that can contend after the trades. They had a rotation that could not contend before the trades. I mean, they just did not have the innings from, and this has been a theme here of BPIB, I think, all season long.
We've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, and a lot of folks said that it was counterintuitive or we didn't know what we were talking about. But, you know, I mean, innings are so important. And if you have starters who go out and go 4 2/3 innings or even 5 innings, which is what they had, that's no way to contend. You can't win series that way. You can't have a good week. You can't put together winning streaks. And like it or not, while the Cardinals haven't done it yet, if they're going to get in this thing and win the division, or even let's think about the wild card. They're not exactly a cinch to win the wild card either. They got to peel off some wins in a row. It doesn't have to be 7 games in a row, but it ought to be 7 out of 9. And to do that, they need the pitching that they weren't getting. You could see it on the horizon. I mean, I'm sure Mozeliak could see it on the horizon. Certainly Lilliquist could see it on the horizon. I'm sure you did too. I could see it coming. It was an innings crisis.
And no, it was, we wrote about it and talked about it.
Yeah, it was going to arrive probably 10 days, 7 days after the trade deadline. If they did nothing, then on this coming road trip, Baltimore, Miami, they were going to reach a meltdown, and it was going to lead to a losing streak.
They only had 2 guys capable of going over 6 innings, Wainwright and Lynn, and then you just can't live that way. Waka was a guy that could give you certainly six, and then sometimes 7 innings. Jaime Garcia, in his brief time in the rotation, he went 7 innings like 3 or 4 times.
Right.
So he was giving you innings. So all of a sudden you're taking 2 pretty good innings guys out of there, and you're
convulsing.
There is a void, and it is counter. And I think we should talk about this. You mentioned it was kind of counterintuitive to a lot of people. Yes, it was. The point is conceded, because we've talked and written ad nauseum about this offense all year long. Obviously, the number one challenge and problem is the offense. But the bigger problem or issue is that there were no big bats available at the deadline.
Right.
The trade with Oakland and Boston doesn't count. It just simply doesn't apply because the Cardinals didn't have a John Lester
to
give to Oakland.
Right. Cespedes was offering Oakland was offering Cespedes for John Lester, not to the world.
It's like, oh, here he is, Cardinals, come get him. No, it wasn't a fit. He was the only major bat that moved in the last month.
Right.
And so it just simply it had to be for John Lester and a rental, you know.
Who was the second best pitcher available.
Exactly. So it just wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So therefore, if you're the general manager, you conclude this. You say, look, there's just no big bet there. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we're going to have to thread the needle. And the way we do that, we're going to have to reinforce our pitching. We're going to hope to get innings to avoid melting down our bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And if the offense comes on, we have people on the roster like Matt Holliday, to name one, we think we'll do better the rest of the way. If we get Tavares in right field, we think that he will hit. Colton Wong will hit and get better. So chances are we think the offense will get better for the rest of the way. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, then the only chance the Cardinals have is to win games 3-2 in the postseason.
That's right.
And so you have to give your team the people who can do that. Wainwright can do it. Lackey can do it. Not sure about Lynn, and that's not a put-down because I like Lance Lynn. Just not sure yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they at least have 2 guys now that can, and if Waka makes it back, That would be three.
And two of those guys are going to make three of the starts in a five-game series, and you win. I mean, that it's the simple math. But also, you have to get there. That's the big thing.
You do
that
have
people,
to get there.
You know, I mean, I understand that there was like this arms race that people talk about between Oakland and Detroit, and they're not in the same division. And the thought is, well, they are clearly fortifying their rotations, accumulating aces, the Smarges and Prices and everything of the world for a head-to-head seven-game series for the American League pennant. That's swell. The Cardinals are not in that position. They have to get there first. And the National League is such a mad scramble right now. I mean, there are two really good teams in the American League, and then Detroit has the potential to get there. The Angels and the A's are really strong teams. There isn't one in the National League. Maybe you disagree, Bernie, but I don't see a Titan in the National League.
Oh, I don't see a Titan.
So just get there. And to get there, the Cardinals had to get better pitching. And they realized, well, we may not score more runs, though there's the hope there.
The potential is there.
But if they don't score more runs, they still had to find a way to 3 days out of five limit their opponents to more runs. And after Lynn, they weren't getting that. So there were 3 days open where they can't win a track meet.
So people have asked me and us since the two trades, did you like the trades? My answer was, I didn't hesitate. My answer is yes, I like the trades. They had thrown the fewest amount of innings, the rotation, mm-hmm. in the majors since mid-June when Joaquin Garcia went down.
Yeah.
Last in the league in major. Last in the, gosh, I can't talk. See, it's good to see you, Derek. I'm really excited.
We're out of practice.
I know. Last in the majors in rotation innings since mid-June.
Yeah.
You just couldn't continue down that path, as you said. Did they give up too much? All right, let's talk about Justin Masterson. All right, one thing I don't like that we do as an industry is that we tout a guy like James Ramsey, and then when he's traded, we say, well, he was blocked anyway. You know what, though? Both things are true.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a problem with him being the piece for Masterson in that the fact is, if you say, well, the Cardinals are spinning it. No, they're not spinning it. Where has Ramsey played this season?
Double A. He was pushed there because there were no playing time. He didn't belong there.
They had other outfielders above him at Triple A that mm-hmm. they, at least two of them, you know, Grichuk and Piscotty, obviously, they put more of a value on them, or they wouldn't have had them over Triple A compared to Ramsey.
And Tavares. Tavares was there. Yeah.
So it's not like this is spin. That's yeah. clearly how they had this. How their own evaluations kind of were laid out. So is there a chance Ramsey could be a really good player in the majors? I don't know. I mean, I've heard him described as a borderline starter, fourth outfielder type. Doesn't really have a position, which was a new one to me. But some people wonder whether he can be even average in center field. I don't know.
The descriptions that I've heard most often internally and then from scouts who have seen him of Ramsey mirror those that I heard about John Jay at the same level. And I want to make that point. It was at the same level,
right.
Not today. But when John Jay was in that, you know, double A, triple A area, you'd talk to scouts there and I would talk to them and they would describe him as, look, this is a guy who most likely is a fourth outfielder, going to hit for a pretty good average. Ramsey has more power potential, but there's a question whether or not that'll translate. Jay can play all three outfield positions. Ramsey can play all three out positions. Will he call one of those out three positions home? Well, they don't know. Same thing with Jay. And then they'd always add this caveat with Jay that says, but if he gets an opportunity, he could be the kind of talent that flourishes. And you hear that same thing about Ramsey. But if he gets an opportunity to play every day, he could be the kind of talent that flourishes because he has that kind of makeup and, you know, he has that those intangibles that either scouts or coaches really love. I talked to him. We haven't had a podcast since the All-Star game. But I talked to him at the Futures game, and I asked him about, you know, being involved in a trade. And, you know, he's got a real good sense about him, and he, you know, his coach says that he wants to change the world. He's very hyper involved, very inquisitive, very much trying to be plugged in with the personalities of the major league level and learn from them. And he said, I recognize that where I am on the depth chart makes me part of that conversation. So he was aware of it.
See, this is the challenge of a general manager. You know, if you're going to make a trade and give up a prospect, you have to deal from surplus.
Yep.
And you have to avoid dealing the guys that you and your scouts, who spend a lot of time evaluating, guys that they considered a core piece for the future. So at the beginning of this, I say, you know, we in our industry sort of like to have it both ways. We say, oh, this guy's a prospect. Then when he's traded, it's like, oh, well, he was expendable. But you know what? Both things are true. He is a prospect, but yes, he was expendable. So I didn't have a problem with it. Maybe one day we'll look back on it and say, eh, too bad they gave him up. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, did you look that way?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either.
There are other examples. I mean, do you look back at Coco Crisp and go, oh, they gave him up for Chuck Finley?
You know, at the time, they had to have Finley. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up. That's like a really good parallel. They had to have Finley. They had to make the trade.
They have to have Masterson.
You know.
They have to.
I think Finley is probably better at that point than Masterson is now. But no, that's a really good analogy. Yeah, would it have been nice to have Coco Crisp? Sure. Did it haunt the franchise? Apparently not.
No, they did okay.
They've been all right.
Yeah.
They've been fine.
So.
All right. Now, let's go to the Boston trade. This is the real controversial one. John Lackey comes here. Alan Craig and Joe Kelly go elsewhere. Now, this one goes to Boston, not elsewhere.
This is the American League, which is elsewhere.
This is the tough one because you give up two players on your major league roster. Let's start with Alan Craig. Again, the trade speaks for itself. The Cardinals would not be trading Alan Craig under any circumstances if they believed that a comeback, a bounce back, a return to form was imminent or even likely in the future. They concluded that they think he's toast, and that's putting it harshly, but that's basically what they concluded. And you say, well, wait a minute, how do we know? They traded him. That's why we know that. This is a very club-friendly contract that he signed, even though they owed him $25.5 million plus a million buyout, $26.5 million. That's not cheap, but it's saying that's not an onerous contract. You don't trade that, and you don't trade a guy who hit 97 RBIs last year unless all of your internal evaluations conclude the arrow is pointing down and down and down and is not going to reverse.
Yeah.
Now, maybe, though, again, I'm not trying to have it both ways. Time will tell. I do think, and I did a long piece about this on STL Today, if you look at John Mozeliak's track record.
Oh, yeah, all the hitters. This is good, yeah.
He's done very, very well about knowing when it's time to cut the cord. There's not one, other than Scott Rolen, who is an entirely different category.
Who requested a trade and is the last core player they traded before Craig.
And it had nothing to do with baseball. It was all about La Russa versus Rolen. And as Mozeliak joked, and as I said, Mozeliak had to make the trade or he would be testifying in court to a double homicide, La Russa and Rolen. So there's not one hitter that he has traded since becoming the GM where you say, oh, my gosh, he screwed it up. No, it's a long list, and some of them are very notable guys, including two World Series MVPs, David Eckstein and David Fries, that one was traded, one was allowed to leave as a free agent. There have been very popular players like Ryan Ludwig. There's been, like, I ran a whole list. I'm not going to go down the whole list. It's a comprehensive list. Now, does this mean that John Mozeliak's judgment is infallible? Of course not. But his track record, as we can look it up, he's basically batting 1,000 when it comes to knowing time to cut bait. So that should give, I would think that would give Cardinals fans some reassurance that they know what they're thinking. They're thinking correctly on Craig.
Yeah. I mean, this is an interesting one because leading up to the trade deadline, I was asked a lot on Twitter or a lot in the chat, maybe not with a week to go in the deadline, but certainly over the previous month, I was asked a lot about trading Craig. And the questions were, they ranged anywhere from legitimate questions such as, you know, well, could the Cardinals trade Craig? Would they discuss trading Craig? To flights of fancy and whimsy that, you know, you wouldn't even listen to in a baseball card trade. You know, could they trade Alan Craig for Mike Stanton? Could they trade, or Juan Carlos Stanton, sorry. Could they trade Alan Craig for David Price? And I always made the point that Alan Craig was locked into a contract that was going to pay him $25.5 million through 2017. And if you're the Miami Marlins, you see that and go, well, wait a minute. Stanton's just in arbitration. Even if he makes $14 million next year, $15 million next year, $18 million next year, that's less of a commitment for 1 year than it is to Alan Craig for the next several years. Same with David Price. Now, the thought is that David Price is going to make $20 million or $18 to $20 million through the arbitration process next year. That's still less than the guarantee for Alan Craig. And the point that I tried to make, and this is the one part of the trade that still that dovetails with what you're talking about, and still I find most interesting of all, is, and I heard this from like folks around the press box and scouts and talking with people internally as well, that if the Cardinals offer Alan Craig in a trade, isn't that a warning sign? If they're mm-hmm. willing to deal him at that contract, mm-hmm. given the fact that he, at when right, has cranked out two MVP-style seasons, just missed a month in each of them. I mean, these are sure. remarkable seasons the sure. last 2 years. If they're willing to trade him, shouldn't that give you pause as to the team that knows mm-hmm. him best, like you're talking about, the team that knows him best is willing to move away from him? And I heard that enough that it made me think, look, the contract, you're guaranteeing $25.5 million. These other guys aren't. You know, the sign that the Cardinals will be willing to trade, just the makings aren't there for a deal right now. The makings aren't there for the Cardinals to move him. And here they did.
Now, can Craig bounce back? I don't rule it out. I have respect for John Mozeliak's track record of understanding when it's time to cut the ties with hitters that that are in decline. Great track record with that. It's interesting, though, because Boston won a World Series last year, and I'm not saying they're infallible either. They made some mistakes. I mean, they
sure
one of them is catching for the Cardinals right now, AJ Pierzynski.
Right.
They've made some miscues in terms of evaluation, but I think if Craig has any life to get back to sustaining really good production. If he's got a lifeline, Boston's a pretty good fit. It's a much better hitter's park. It's a new start. Mm-hmm. I think that he will have this coming off season a chance to retool his body.
Yes.
I think he can get stronger. He needs to get stronger. The conditioning will be better because, number one, he'll be able to do it. He won't be dealing with a postseason injury that right. has to heal.
He'll be able to do it before getting in the batting cage as opposed to while getting in the batting cage at spring training.
I think he'll be highly motivated. Mm-hmm. And here's one of the things about this trade that really intrigues me. I haven't written this yet, but I'm going to try to incorporate it into something I write. You know, there's been all this back and forth about the Cardinals hitting approach and John Mabry taking some heat, perhaps unfairly. Some people would say he doesn't take enough heat. But he's certainly under scrutiny.
Sure.
I think Alan Craig, if you would say, okay, who's the one guy where you shake your head and say, what the hell happened here? It would be Alan Craig. In terms of, he clearly changed his hitting approach, mm-hmm. whether he did it his own, whether he did it working with the coaches, I don't know. He clearly changed his, you wrote a piece about that. Mm-hmm. He changed his hitting approach. Now, he goes to Boston. Maybe their coaches see something. Maybe they think they can fix him. Maybe he goes back to an approach that worked for him in the past. That would not reflect well on the Cardinals coaching staff if that happens. So this is going to be not only a test case to see can an aging player at 30 who seems to be going way downhill, whose own team, who's pretty damn smart, feels it's hopeless or they wouldn't have traded him, test case for their knowledge, also a test case for the Cardinals hitting approach, maybe some kind of referendum on that. I'm probably overstating it, but do you get my point?
No, I do. I think there's something to that. And, you know, that there is always the sense that maybe there's a new voice that's needed that kind of mm-hmm. cracks through. I mean, look, they did try a lot of things with Alan. Also, there's an element of jarring here. You know, I mean, like you jar a guy out of the comfort zone, which is really what these whole trades were about, and even the addition of Pierzynski. The Cardinals, that, you know, happy partridge family, you know, that they were, you know, all singing along, everybody getting along, and they like really that. Thought that they are. Like, it was the partridge family, right?
Yeah. Plus, you got Mr. Rogers in the manager's office, so yeah, we can drop some.
This is a T-shirt that is waiting to happen. Yeah. Is the Cardinals team as the partridge family logo? I'm sure our crack, far more creative logoists out there, the graphic designers will get right on it. But, you know, they Mozeliak with these moves has unsettled the clubhouse. You know, and you that also works in private time. I mean, look, individually. I talked to Shelby Miller after his start in San Diego on the trade deadline day, and he was really, I guess, jolted by them trading Joe Kelly, guy who stood in his wedding. Shelby stood in, you know, they were both groomsmen in each other's weddings. They've grown up together. They're tight friends. They spent a lot of time together off the field. But it wasn't just that. I thought it was very interesting that Shelby went on to say he recognized that could have been him walking out the door. And he said, I know that I was involved in the talks. I am aware of all this stuff going on. They could have given up on me, but they kept me. I need to recognize how close I came to not being the guy I want to be. And I thought the quote was pretty telling. He said, you know, we were just talking there, and he goes, I want to be that draft pick that they talk about, the one that stays. All right, well, there's your wake-up call. And you know what? If it took moving for Alan Craig to go, okay, look, something is clearly not right. What I've been doing my whole career is not there for me anymore. And the changes that the Cardinals just were falling on deaf ears, or he tried and couldn't get. Maybe this is the jolt that he needs, too. Ryan Lubick was in the same spot.
Yeah.
You remember a few years ago when he came to the Cardinals,
right.
He needed that.
You would think so. So I wish him well. I really do. Now, giving up Joe Kelly was tough. I don't know of anyone who doesn't like him. He has great stuff. He's 26 years old, still relatively cheap. That said, if you can get a John Lackey...
For the same price.
Someone who's thrown 104 postseason innings. Not only won Game 7 of the 2002 World Series for the Angels, but pitched great.
Yeah.
And then eliminated the Cardinals in Game 6 last year. I mean...
Pitched well.
A guy that will give you... He's gone at least 6 innings in 40 of his 51 starts the last 2 years. 40 out of 51. He's gone 7 innings or more... half in half of those starts. Innings eater, big game pitcher, tough guy, attitude, salty. Once described as the most hated man in the American League East.
The most hated catcher in the game.
Yes. Now
that's the battery.
So to me, John Lackey's not David Price. But for what the Cardinals needed, at I think is a reasonable cost, and $500,000 next year.
Yeah,
he checks all the boxes.
It's very funny how the Cardinals have gone from Full House to Animal House in 5 days.
Have you been working on all these lines? The Partridge Family, Full House,
isn't that
to Animal. Great
isn't
line.
That amazing.
Great line.
It is true.
It is.
They've gone from a sitcom to a body movie. This is it's fantastic.
I mean, no. So I really like the Lackey acquisition a lot. I mean, I said that without hesitation, even though, there's a risk involved to trading Joe Kelly. But again, if Waka makes it back, and you know you have Lackey, and you've got Lynn in place, and you've got Miller in place, and you've got Wainwright in place, and you've got Carlos Martinez there, and you've got Marco Gonzalez on the way, and you've got Tim Cooney on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know that, and I mentioned Waka, I believe, would Joe Kelly even be in the rotation next year? I mean, I think it's a legit question.
No,
probably not.
Probably not.
So if you look at it that way, even though Joe Kelly, talented guy, if you look at it that way, you know, you may have traded and affected a guy that projects as a reliever and gotten John Lackey. And yes, granted, it's a short window, but you do have a full season of him in 2015. So I think that's worth the exchange. I think the exchange rate makes sense. That's just my opinion.
I mean, it's a simple thing. Like, who's going to make more money next year, Joe Kelly or John Lackey? It's Joe Kelly.
Yeah.
He's going to make more money. I mean, he's going to make more than the minimum, and Lackey's going to make the minimum. And all things being equal, who would you rather have in your rotation, John Lackey or Joe Kelly?
It's obviously Lackey.
So, I mean, that's an academic.
Joe Kelly's going 7 innings, I think, twice as a starter.
Right.
And it's, you know,
and
in the last 3 years.
Is going to be far different. So, and, man, there's some bite now to the Cardinals. I mean, it's an interesting thing because it's certainly a message sent to the clubhouse, but also makes them a little bit more, you know, less friendly to face in the division, which is something that has been missing, candidly.
The bottom line, or one of them for me about these trades, is Mozeliak managed to get two starting pitchers and at least try to stop the bleeding, at least try to suture the wounds. Lackey will do it. Masterson, we're not sure, but again, worth the gamble. He did it without disturbing the guys that they think were their untouchables, you know, without trading Oscar Tavares, without trading Carlos Martinez, without giving up, and I'm not saying Rob Kaminsky's untouchable, but without giving him up. They do not want to trade Rob Kaminsky, the young left-hander.
That would be a tough one to get.
And A-ball, and there's others. And Alex Reyes. So he believes that their view is that they were able to bolster their rotation without giving up anyone that projects as a core piece long-term.
There's also an element here of...
And I would agree with that.
Absolutely.
Now, this doesn't mean that their projections... I'm sorry. This doesn't mean that the people that they are touting as core pieces for a long time will live up to those expectations. But their evaluation is, these are people we want to build around, namely Tavares and Martinez. Mm-hmm. And if that's your evaluation, you have to stand with it. Doesn't mean it'll come true, but you got
to
stand with it.
Same thing is true with the lineup. Look, they committed to this lineup from the very beginning of the season, and their evaluation, like you say, to use your language, their evaluation is that this offense will produce. This is the lineup that they've committed to, just sub in Tavares for Craig, and off they go. You know, they're banking on this being the lineup that produces, so they're trying to follow through on that commitment because they couldn't tear it up mid-season. That's something that they'll have to revisit this offseason if it doesn't come around. But let me throw in one element here, the trade deadline. Did they whiff by not making the deal for David Price? They had the players on hand. It would have cost them more, obviously. It would have cost them off the major league roster and one of those core prospects that you're talking about, one of those highly valued prospects, to make that deal happen. But there's a lot of folks in the wake of the three-team deal that said Tampa didn't really get that much in return. And there's an element.
I don't know if I agree with that, but go ahead, please.
No. I think it's very clear that Tampa would have wanted more from the Cardinals to make that deal. Let's get that. I mean, the Cardinals could not have made a deal for similar type player because they didn't have those similar players and they didn't have a third party involved, to the best of my knowledge. They may have roped one in at some point. But the Cardinals would have had to give up more. Did the Cardinals miss, or did they show a reluctance because of the future financial commitment, $18 to $20 million next year for David Price versus the minimum for John Lackey, and they thought, well, this is a place where we could really save a bit? And did they miss adding a pitcher who maybe doesn't just call the next year and a half St. Louis home for the next year and a half, but for a long time? You know,
never know that.
No.
Yeah, they still got a chance to sign him if they want.
They do.
Well, maybe with Lackey they don't.
I mean,
I don't know. I don't know how to answer.
Well, Lackey will leave before he becomes a free agent, before Price becomes a free agent.
Right. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that, really. I mean, if someone, whether it be me or anyone listening or you, just felt you do whatever it takes to get David Price, well, then you say, if that's your attitude, then you say they whiffed. I'm more nuanced in how I view this because I sort of understand their whole roster building approach. Mm-hmm. And as you have written about so well so many times, at the top of the list, control years are very, very important to John Mozeliak and the Cardinals and Bill DeWitt.
Yeah.
Now, again, we don't have to agree with that. No one listening to this has to agree with it. But this is their overriding organizational philosophy about constructing your roster. The most precious thing you have are cost-controlled years, mm-hmm. people that are going to be a big part of your team for years to come. And that's something you got to be really careful with. That's their philosophy. Might be proven to be a silly philosophy. Given the success that they've had, again, I always think these people are entitled to the benefit of the doubt. So I don't know how to answer the question. I personally would not have given up Oscar Tavares and Carlos Martinez for David Price. I wouldn't have done it.
Well, not both of them, but one of them. Would you have given up one of them and another player?
I would have given up Tavares only if I was convinced that Stephen Piscotty was going to be that big plus bat with power, mm-hmm. not just a guy that hits 300. Power bat. If they were convinced that they could count on him to be a true power bat, I would have felt better about making that deal. But I'm sure they have some questions. Does he project as a power hitter? They got to be really careful here with that because they're lacking in power in the organization,
right?
Up and down. So,
no, and interested teams had the same question too. I mean, as they kind of evaluated whether to go Piscotty or to Tavares for the question.
Sure.
They had the same thought.
How's his power profile? I mean, right. No one knows yet. It hasn't been there yet, but he's still relatively inexperienced in the minor leagues. What would you have done? I mean, which you brought up the question, and I don't think I did a good job of answering it to your specification. But no, I wouldn't have made the trade based on knowing what the Cardinals' philosophy is,
mm-hmm.
and they're pretty strong about their philosophy. In that regard, I wouldn't have deviated from that philosophy.
I think it's very interesting because they had a chance to add a player who they could at least try to bring in the fold as a long-term core player. And the financial flexibility is there. And the prospects to land a player like that, they are there now. The Cardinals like, this is funny to say, the Cardinals are very comfortable with where they are as far as the number of prospects they have and the payroll that they have. They are very comfortable. And while all these moves maybe were to make the clubhouse a little less comfortable, Mozeliak remains now very comfortable at the spot. If they had hired or if they had acquired David Price, there would be a lot less comfort payroll-wise, depth-wise, flexibility-wise, and it would be uncharacteristic. However, they would have that core player that they have an opening for. Now, do they not go that route? Do they look at, Lance Lynn as an extension possibility? Is that something that they want to do? Matt Adams is going to be up here. Do they pull like a Matt Carpenter type deal for Matt Adams? Or is there somebody out there?
I was going to say I hate to go there, but look, Troy Tulowitzki's obviously dropping hints like bombs that he wouldn't mind being traded.
That he would like to be a Cardinal.
Is this the winter where you just say, look, we're going to make a big run to get him from the Rockies? Well, you need some payroll flexibility to make a trade like that.
No, you do.
And you need to have some bullets in the chamber. You need to have some trade pieces now to be able to make that deal.
Less now than you did last year, though.
Yeah. And so if you had gone all in on David Price, I'm not saying it wipes out your chances of acquiring Tulowitzki, but common sense tells you.
Oh, no, it does.
You'd have fewer assets to take to the trade market. So I happen to think Mozeliak does have a plan in mind for this winter.
Well, yeah.
I don't know what it is. But this isn't just like the end of the story. It's like, oh, well, we got Lackey for next year. We're good. No, I think the GM's kind of pissed off, actually. And I think that we're talking about shakeups. I think we're only seeing the beginning here. I don't think it's over.
I would agree.
And I don't think it's over even this month because
they have the opportunity to go and add a bench guy this month.
Yeah.
So it's just not clear like how.
Well, let's one other thing before we get to a topic that's very much related. Just a quickie from you. We didn't talk about Michael Wacha in this because, again, we're recording it Monday afternoon. He's having an MRI today, so anything we would say about evaluating where he stands medically could be outdated, so that's why we're not even going to go there. But let's say for the purpose of conversation that he is able to make it back in early September, which I think is the timeline the Cardinals hope for and Wacha hopes for. Mm-hmm. What does this do? Like, in other words, does he immediately become a starter? Is he in the bullpen for a little bit? Then back in the rotation. If he's in the rotation, who's not in the rotation? What's your read on all this?
Mozeliak says that he believes that he'll come back as a starter, but has left the door open that if they could bring him back as a reliever, an impact reliever, and that shortens the time he would need away, then they would consider that, especially if everybody in the rotation is cranking out. If they don't think that Wacha at the spot where he's at coming back from injury, coming back where he'll have spring training in August, essentially, if they don't think him coming in is going to be an upgrade over any of the five guys that they have, or in October, any of the four guys that they'll reduce to, then they'll have to consider that he could be a weapon out of the bullpen, which when you think about it, there's actually sort of that opening there for somebody else, for Matheny to trust in a close game beyond Pat Neshek to bridge the gap to Rosenthal.
Follow-up question.
A righty, I should say.
It's, sure, the follow-up question. He had the stress condition. Obviously, they're you know, something they treated very seriously, as they should have. Is it more stressful, not only mentally as a reliever? No, I'm not even making a joke about it, but it sounds like that. But is it more stressful? Is it more risky to have him working in relief? Then, look, you prepare as a starter. You pitch once every 5 days. You can get full rehab treatment in between starts. You can make sure that your throwing is limited. You're a reliever, man. You're up a lot. You're throwing. You're sitting down. You're pitching consecutive days. I wouldn't put him in the bullpen.
That's the big question.
I wouldn't do it.
Is it more stressful to be called upon on back-to-back days or multiple times within a short window, or to go out there and throw 100 pitches and be counted on for 6-plus inning, which is more taxing, which is more grind? I mean, that was the question with Garcia. That was the question with pitchers going back and back and back. And it's almost like you have to make it a case-by-case situation. You know, they have to – that's one of the reasons why there's been such a delay here, Bernie, is not only do they want him to heal – but they also want to understand when he comes back, how do they prevent this the next time? And if their view is that and this is a use issue, this is a use injury. So if their view is that it is more strenuous to be used more often in a short window than it is to be used at length every 5 days, then you're right. They'll abandon the notion of him being a reliever.
And one final thought on this. Justin Masterson definitely profiles as a reliever, if you were in a situation where you need to get some tough right-handed hitters out.
Oh, yeah.
He's got great numbers against right-handed hitters. Great. And he can strike them out. He can ground them out. And I think he could flourish in that role is all I'm trying to say.
Plus,
It's
a great point.
See, we didn't even get to Carlos Martinez. That's all right. We'll get to him.
We'll have plenty of time.
I simply believe I've said – how many times have we said it on the podcast – that he needs to pitch a lot. So this is good that he's down in Memphis. It's going to benefit him in the long run.
Yep.
And you know what? He may be reconditioned and have a way to get left-handed hitters at. By the time he comes back, he could actually become a weapon again in that bullpen. I think this was a good move. All right, let's talk about this whole clubhouse issue. And I know most people are wondering, when are you guys going to talk about all this Taveras stuff? Well, I don't even know what to say about it. I went off in my column about it today. I don't know what Cardinals players specifically are grumbling. I know enough of them are. I know enough to where Joe Buck and picked up on it and said something about Taveras on the national broadcast Saturday. You know, in effect, his approach, his work ethic. They're not crazy about having – the players aren't crazy about having Oscar Taveras forced on them. You were out in San Diego. I don't know why I'm even, citing outside media. You picked up on that discord. Other writers have too, like Ken Rosenthal. What the heck's going on here? I mean, I don't even know where to start. First of all, I understand that players don't like to see their friends traded. It does shake things up, but it's big leagues. Get over it. Like LaRusse always said, you can't handle the pressure here. You don't like the way things are here. Go do something else for a living.
Well, Tony never really tried to cultivate the same kind of clubhouse atmosphere, though, that Matheny has. And I think we need to keep that in mind. And Matheny even addressed that there in San Diego.
Yep.
He said it's very difficult when you try to sell these guys from day one on the notion that we're a family and that we're bonded together and we're going to do this together and we're going to succeed together.
Well, why would you do that?
Well, but that's what he's done.
Yeah.
And that was his aim, and that's what he wants to do.
That's a major problem at the very beginning. You should never do that. It's a family while you're together, but nothing lasts forever in baseball.
Okay.
A family is children are born, and if the parents and all the kids are blessed to live long lives, you're together for 70, 80 years. Your teammates, you're in the same house. That's family. No, baseball's not a family. You're a family when you're together. Mm-hmm. You pull together as one when you are teammates. You have a common cause. You have each other's backs. You give each other tremendous support while you're together. But we all know you're not together very long.
Right.
So the whole thing to try to make these players believe they're part of a family, it's nonsense. So
yep.
I have to put some of this on him then.
But apparently they bought into it. Well, this was his point, was... I think, I don't think I'm speaking out of school because he went at length talking to us about it and said, Like, he took the trade hard. It was really difficult on him too. And I think this is at the root of it, that, you know, he said if you ask them to buy into this and then you walk into the room and say, look, you're not part of the family anymore, of course it's going to be hard. Of course it's going to be difficult. And you're
But did he tell the players they're all going to be Cardinals forever? Never going to change a 25-man roster? I mean, this is just, it's utter nonsense.
Okay. Well, then you got to rethink. Then they have to rethink how they...
These are adults. Some of them will leave as... They will decide, hey, I want to leave. I can make more money elsewhere. And good for them. I'll applaud. Yeah. That's the point.
A couple of these guys are going to leave. Some of these guys want to leave.
Good. Go. The general manager decides, hey, I'm under pressure. Fans are saying, what are you going to do about this team? Owner's probably saying, you know, come on, I think we got to do something. That's what's so ironic about this. Players grumble about, well, when's he going to do something? You know, when's the general manager going to give us some help? General manager's got pressure to do stuff. He can't afford to look at it as Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. You know, he can't afford that. All right? It's a business. Players leave. They say, no, I'm opting out of my contract, or I'm a free agent. Oh, I want more money elsewhere. I'm going to take that. See you later. That's fine. That's what they should do. It's not a family. It's a family while you're together, but you don't know how long together will last. So it's just nonsense.
Yeah, you're putting me in a spot where I have to
defend. No, don't defend it. No, because I don't think you are defending.
I'm trying to explain.
And I'm just getting mad.
And yeah.
You understand why I'm irate about
it? I understand why you're irate, and also... This is what I said in San Diego. I said I've never seen anything like this.
It's stupid.
I mean, I've been around trades. I've seen guys who were liked traded.
Sure.
You know, Ryan Ludwig was well liked in the clubhouse, but he was traded and life went on. And I swear, and some of the, there are two additional elements here. One, obviously, Craig was part of a very successful time. And there's a lot of fondness for Craig. And there is a sense with his teammates that they went through the toughest time with him. And now they don't get to be a part of his, you know, revival. And they want to be there for that. I get that.
He asked to be traded to Boston.
That's fine. Okay, I understand that. You know, it's like you go through tough times with a friend. You want to be there when they succeed. Fine. You can be there through FaceTime. It's okay. All right? Then the other part of it is... how they found out and the sense that that could have been handled so much better. So I think some of the frustration that several of the veterans and certainly Craig and Kelly had personally about not hearing from the team first, not hearing from the people that they had pledged some sort of commitment to and thought that it was a two-way street, for them to learn via TV and Twitter and the media... I don't know. I don't know. Justin Masterson found out from a general manager who said, look, we are talking about you in a trade. It's not quite done yet, but I wanted you to hear it from me first. Get off the bike. Come out of your workout. We're going to find you. And we go out of our way to say, you are being talked about right now.
Right.
We wanted you to hear it from us first.
Well,
Lackey got a text message. Said, it's potential that you're on the move.
Well... if it was not handled well, or if it could have been handled better, and I agree that it could, that's unfortunate. But again,
Brett Wallace and Clayton Mortensen were on a bus to New Orleans when they stopped the bus and had Hammer Maloney say, "Look, guys, it looks like this deal is going to go through. Before you hear from your friends and family, you guys are probably involved in this deal."
But I know this, and you know this, because you and I earlier in the year got into it pretty heatedly with the general manager when he wouldn't confirm a very simple thing.
Right.
Oscar Tavares being promoted from Memphis the first time. Because, and I've gotten into it with the general manager a number of times on stuff like this, and he's always said, I owe it to the players. They need to know first before I talk about it with anyone else.
Right.
And I respect that. He's been consistent. If this time it got away from him, because maybe somebody leaked who shouldn't have leaked before he had.
It was on the Boston side.
It was on the Boston side. These things happen.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't turn this, if I were a player, I mean, in this multimedia age, social media age, everything's instantaneous. Agents gab. a trade involves another team, people on that side have loose lips. Mm-hmm. You can't always put a lid on it. You can't always get to the player in time.
Maybe they're, you know what?
And look, if Mozeliak had a history of this kind of, you know, callous,
right? Which
then I would sit here and rip him, but he doesn't.
No.
He's been very good about letting the players know first.
You know what? To kind of put,
I don't like the fact that it implies that from their end, that somehow this was an example of how he was just looking to screw him or something. Maybe, he wasn't.
Maybe July 31st, 2014 is the day the Cardinals lost their naivete.
Very well said.
Maybe.
It's true.
It's not a family. You may not find out from us first. Things happen. You don't perform, you leave. Maybe this is the moment that the Cardinal way took its dark turn.
Why?
The naivete is gone.
How did they get to this point to where it got so chummy and complacent and
winning?
They were but this thought that they were all going to, you know, if you were horrible at your job, and Alan Craig was statistically and sabermetrically one of the worst players in baseball this year. That's a fact. It's not an opinion.
No,
he was. How does it get to the point where you're out, where you're shocked or outraged, or you couldn't see it coming that this was a possibility? How do you get into such a cocoon? That's what I'm trying to wonder.
Because you cover the walls with plush and hugs. I mean, I don't know how to other way to
no,
put it.
No, you're right.
Look, this is a group that had great success. They are having great success. You know, three consecutive NLCS is a core group that all got along. You know, it's not an overwhelming personality bunch, but it's a group that understood, that did cherish where they were. They all enjoyed being Cardinals. And
I respect
that. I think that came across, and they did come across as very chummy. They had their T-shirts made. They all had their secret handshakes in the dugout. I think this has become a team that, like you said, is this season's team. Their performance was not easy to like, but I think the group has been around so long and had such key personalities in it for so long that, and I'm going to get to a point, that they became beloved by a fan base and they became valued for how close they were. And I will say this, I bet you it stems from the fact that most of these guys stayed and Albert left. And I would imagine that that has also colored the perception of this team.
I don't dislike these guys at all. I thought Joe Kelly was a wonderful fella. I like Craig. I know some players feel that I picked on him. I didn't realize that writing stats was picking on a guy. It is what it is. It was a bad situation. You know, it's not as if people have an agenda here.
Right.
I like him. But I'm, again, and we should wrap this part up because I'm repeating myself. I'm just kind of astounded by the naivete.
Well, it's gone.
So
maybe that's the
shattered, and it needed to be shattered, apparently.
Evidently.
And did maybe the manager got the message too?
It'll be interesting to see if we hear the family thing, an explanation again.
I mean, you know what, Derek, and I know you agree with this. Again, I'm not debating you. You're just trying to explain it. There is a middle ground here. It doesn't mean that an organization and the manager and all the players are cold stone.
Yeah.
Heartless mercenaries. I'm not saying that. They shouldn't be that way. They aren't that way. But the idea that, oh, well, we're a family. We're all going to be together, you know. No, that's not reality. And you can't give your players this feeling that somehow, hey, you buy in and everything's going to be all right and, you know, the boogeyman will go away. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Anybody can be traded at any time unless they have a no-trade clause.
It's interesting because...
Or sent to the minors.
I'm going to pull from when I covered the Blues. There's an example here of exactly what you're talking about is, you know, the Cardinals have talked a lot about the individuals within the jerseys and bringing together personalities and the better men and all that stuff. And that's how Matheny has talked about in this family notion, you know, that we spend more, or he says that the players spend more time together with each other than they do their own families. So we have to create a family unit here. And that is based on the guys wearing the uniforms, right, inside the jerseys. With the Blues, the way they talked about it wasn't the guy inside the jersey. it was the logo on the front of the jersey. And they said, while you're wearing that jersey, you are with us. You take it off, you go elsewhere, you can be an Oiler, you can be an Avalanche, you can be a Blackhawk, whatever. But while you're wearing that jersey, you play for the logo on the front of it, not the man on the inside. And maybe that's what you're talking about. Maybe that's the middle ground.
That's another way to put it. That's great. All right.
So can I add one thing here?
Yeah.
All right. So we've all heard, and there was discussion. You mentioned the Buck bringing it up and everything like that.
Yeah, we're talking about that. It'll be our final thing. And
okay.
Good. Go ahead.
Then I want to say something about that. I would like my. Okay.
Should I move the microphone closer?
This is my moment. Okay. This is my Stephen Colbert.
I am excited.
Yeah. This is John great. Stewart ending.
Damn! I wish I had some popcorn.
It's very short.
I wish I had a shot of vodka. I'm ready now. Go. I'm only kidding. Go ahead. I'm really excited to hear it.
It's very easy for a player who is frustrated with another player's work ethic or another player's attitude or another player's or their perception of that player's attitude. It is very easy for that player to say it to a reporter. It is far more difficult for them to approach that player and say it and be the leader that is necessary.
Good.
All right? It's very easy to pull a reporter aside or pull a teammate aside and kibitz and say, well, we don't like how this guy goes about his job. It is another thing entirely to go to the player you have a problem with and teach them how to be better.
Thank you.
To reach out and say, I am going to help you. And if this whole thing here with they want to really put their pillars up and say, these are the leaders of the clubhouse, these are the guys that we're going to build around. Well, if those leaders are pulling a reporter aside as opposed to pulling Tavares aside, that's the issue.
That's brilliant. It really is. And, you know, you said it better than I was going to write something similar to that coming up today, later today. You said it better than I could write it.
You can borrow that.
No, I mean, that's one of the things about the Tavares whisper campaign that bothers me. Well, there's a bunch of it. First of all, I don't believe it's true.
Mm-hmm. It's not.
And yeah. I think he's misunderstood. There's so many layers to this. We could do an hour special. I think that when you have a 22-year-old kid who's not all that ingrained into the culture of the United States, he's gonna be immature. He's gonna come across as a little bit distant because he's not one of the boys. Culturally, it's hard for him to be one of the boys. He doesn't speak English very well. He's a cocky kid, which to me is great. Mm-hmm. He's confident. He believes in himself. He wants to play. Mm-hmm. If this is a core guy we're talking about, Albert Pujols, and I'm not saying he's going to be Pujols. Albert Pujols in 2001 had an attitude. He wanted to play. He believed in himself. It was almost like, you know, give me the bat. Let me do my thing. Tavares is the same way. There's nothing wrong with that. That's number one. Number two, so I just get really, when you're talking about a guy like in his work ethic, you're questioning his character basically, you know, be really careful with that. You know, don't confuse attitude or aloofness because he can't speak your language. Right. And so therefore it's kind of hard to bond with him. So you sort of put him over there on an island and you wonder what he's thinking instead of knowing. And you hear gossip. It's just, you don't do that, first of all. Number two, to your point, but I'm going to add one. If you want to question things, first of all, and you're going to whisper stuff to reporters, put your damn name on it. Be a man. Okay? If whoever you are, just say, look, we player, and I'm not going to name names because I don't know, but if you're player Joe Smith said, we all know Oscar has talent, but we want to see a little more of this from him. Mm-hmm. Or we think he should do this. Or, you know, a problem with young players is they got to know they don't have it made. They got to be pushed. He's got to push themselves.
Right.
Put your name on it. Be constructive. That's the other thing. The third thing is the big one that you hit on. You know, if they're seeing evidence that he's not working right, or hard enough, or that his attitude's wrong, or whatever. If you're a team leader, do something about it. That your point is spot on. Where is the leadership? The guys that are core guys that are going to be here a long time, don't they owe it to their team? Not John Mozeliak, not Bill DeWitt, the people in uniform, don't they owe it to their manager, mm-hmm. to their teammates, to try to do everything they can to not only help Tavares, but if he needs it, to kick him in the ass.
Yeah.
They do.
They can't play favorites.
They have that obligation.
They can't go, well, I like this guy better. No, Oscar Tavares is a talented player who this team is going to be built around, or they want to be built around, for years to come. If you have, and look, there's fine questions out there that are unrelated to the cultural or the age thing. You know, he put in a lot of effort. They flew him here every month this offseason to put in the conditioning effort. They sent him out to CIHP. Matt Holliday will go out there and watch him work out. Matt Holliday said, look, he talked about it. He said,
well, where's Holliday in all this? I mean, that's a fair question, but he did this winter. He should address this then.
He should. Go ahead. So that was part of this winter was, okay, Oscar, we're going to show you how to condition and get strong for this, to stay in shape and everything like that. And Holliday would go out there and would give compliments. And actually, this winter when I talked to him, was really excited about the turn that Tavares had made.
I remember reading the piece he wrote.
He was really excited about it.
That's why I'm confused by all this.
Well, so now spring training comes. Oscar doesn't make the team. And there was a sense that maybe he, or not a sense, there was this reality that he did not put forth the same dedication to stay in AAA that he put forth to try to make the majors, that there was a frustration there. And his conditioning is not the same today as it was when he hit spring training. There was a frustration with the injury. But part of that was also language. I mean, it wasn't just speaking Spanish. It was understanding the words that he was saying and conveying to him, look, you have to trust that foot. You're chop-stepping. You're hopping off that foot to make a catch. We see all these problems, and your body language says you're still hurt, while what you're saying to us, not in Spanish, not in English, but just saying in general, is that you're okay. There was a conflict from what the Cardinals saw and from what Oscar did. And when he didn't make the team, even after Matheny pushed, I watched it. It was in Fort Myers, and he watched him, and he pushed him, and he said, look, you need to show me that you can get around second base without chop-stepping.
And
you need to show me you can slide
into the skipper was right.
I need to see this stuff.
Right.
And Oscar came back from that. He had pushed himself, and he had new faith in the foot and felt like, okay, this is the time where I take off. And then he was dismissed from camp. And, you know, there was some disenchantment there.
Right. Look, I was down there, and I wrote a long piece about this. It was before he got dismissed from camp, or sent to the minors.
Basically. Optioned out. Yeah.
Optioned out. I understand I understand why people would be exasperated by that. Mm-hmm. Like, in other words, like, if Cardinals players or the staff were exasperated by him mm-hmm. in spring training, I don't blame them. I can understand why you would be exasperated. This great build-up. It's the great Oscar Tavares. You know, it's time to play ball. He won't go to the post. He won't push the ankle. How much does he really want to play? How much does he want this? I could see where all that would kind of just settle, hang over the thing.
Yeah.
But what I see too is that the 22-year-old kid who last year, when he hurt the ankle, was told, "Oh, it's fine. Oh, you'll be out a week. No, you're fine. It's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
You're fine. Oh, am I fine? You're fine. It's great. There's nothing to worry about." Yeah, then he had to have surgery.
Right. No,
they had to rip the ankle open and operate after they told him, "Don't worry, everything's fine."
Distrust went both ways.
If you're a 22-year-old kid who's scared by that, after your bosses and the people you trust told you, "No, the ankle's great. Don't worry about it. You're fine. Mm-hmm. Minor. And it turned out to be major. You had to have invasive surgery. Wouldn't you be just a little scared about, like, letting it rip in spring training? I can see it from his standpoint.
No, you're right. And
if he's a 30-year-old player, different. It's a kid.
And there's a different aspect, or there's another element to that, too, is Colton Wong rolled mm-hmm. his ankle at the same time and had a sprain. Had one that was similar to the first diagnosis of Oscar. And so Tavares is told, "Oh, you'll be back, you know, put on the DL, you'll be back in a couple weeks. Oh, Colton, you know, you'll be fine, you'll be back in a couple weeks." Colton Wong was back in a couple weeks. Oscar came back, went back on the DL, had problems. So from a clubhouse perspective, the sense is, well, Colton was able to kind of soldier through and play hurt and get through this. And because he had the same injury.
They're all doctors now?
Well, but this is the thing is, if you present them as equal and one player's back sooner, then all of a sudden he gains the reputation of being a gamer. And
yeah, but these guys were sniping about. They were sniping Wong earlier.
No,
too.
But it catapults a reputation.
And I get it.
And I think that I don't know.
Maybe, I don't think that's fair.
No, I'm not sure I have ever encountered something like this. No, I'm trying to think.
I think it's in some way you're right, but in some ways it's kind of one of the oldest stories in sports. You have a veteran team. You've got this highly touted farm system. You've got this incredibly hyped guy. And people have been talking about him and writing about him. The general manager's comparing him to Pujols. He's coming. And he's going to take somebody's job. And not only is he going to take somebody's job, he's going to take your friend's job. And look at him over there. Yeah, he's cocky. He doesn't really hang out with us. He doesn't even speak English. Okay, superstar, aren't you special? It's one of the oldest stories in the book, resentment and jealousy of a young, heralded player who's coming to take my buddy's job. In some ways, it's very easy to understand.
Well, I go back to the original
but
thing.
I want to say this, and not that I think Cardinals players listen to the podcast, but feel free to pass it along. If you got a problem with the way the kid is working, first of all, and you're going to talk to reporters, put your damn name on it. Be a man. That's number one. Number two, better than that, as Derek Gould suggests, why don't you grab Tavares by the scruff of the neck and tell him how it's going to be?
That's all I know. It's far.
But to sit there and have a whispering campaign, it's gutless. Absolutely gutless.
I'm not saying anything on the podcast that I haven't said in the clubhouse or in the dugout, and nor do I ever. I mean, as I've told the manager, all you're going to get from me is consistency. And I said it the other day in a group setting. I said it's far easier to pull me aside with a complaint than it is to walk up to Tavares and say it yourself. But just because it's harder, that's the right thing to do.
Do you see? I'm going to put you on the spot. Have you? Because you're with the team all the time. I'm not, obviously. Have you seen any evidence of a lack of work ethic?
I think the conditioning concern was there.
But that's ancient by now.
No, but is he doing it now? Because you can rebuild and you need to stay strong through the season. And I think that is a genuine, like, look, it's not just enough to go hit in the cage. We know that you love hitting in the cage. You have to go take fly balls. You have to go work out because
well then somebody should do something.
They've talked to him about it, and it's a matter of now buying in. But it's also the aspect.
And if he doesn't buy in, shame on him.
But this is what bothers me is there's like, you know, a double standard here. Is they expect him to know this stuff up front. And maybe it's because everybody thinks he's so talented that he's supposed to inherently know how to get through a 6-month season when he's never been through one. He's supposed to inherently know how to keep strength for September when he's never played in September before. So while they say, well, he's got to know how to do this. Well, they spend a lot of time talking to pitchers about, hey, look, we're going to save you innings because you don't know what it's like to pitch in September. And you're going to have to learn on the job. And it seems like they are more willing to allow for a young pitcher to make his missteps and learn on the job when it comes to going through, you know, this notion of, how to survive the season, how to maintain the strength, how to build. Look, I mean, it wasn't until this year that Lance Lynn talked about, I finally have a regimen between starts that I know I can. It wasn't until last week that Shelby Miller said, I have a regimen between starts that I know will maintain my strength in my lower back so that my mechanics don't fall apart in August and September. It was only last year that Lance Lynn said, I feel like I have a regimen in place that I had to learn on the job so that I knew when to work out, what to do, how to maintain my weight and my strength so that I could be stronger in September. So now all of a sudden the position player, though, he's supposed to know it inherently. He's supposed to come fully formed.
I really appreciate that you bring this up and you introduce this because I never thought about it in those terms. But you're absolutely right. And we've seen guys that have been here a lot longer than Oscar Tavares just now figuring out how you're supposed to condition yourself and prepare for the long run. Yet he doesn't know, but somehow this makes him lazy, it's just not fair. And it comes down to the one word we've used a lot today: leadership. Where is it? Not just players, everybody in the organization. If they think that Oscar Tavares doesn't know how to condition himself or isn't pushing himself in terms of how it applies to getting through a full season and making sure the ankle's strong and all that, someone's got to take charge.
Yep.
You think Oscar...
Well, and he has to be receptive to it,
too. Well, and if he is in shape... But I find it hard to believe guy's got so much on the line, he would balk? I don't...
I mean...
Well, you know what?
It's a hard thing to know.
If he's the kind of guy that would reject that advice and basically say no, well, then they should have traded his ass. How's that?
There you go.
So then they should have traded him.
There you go.
And if they didn't, then it's a mistake.
I'm going to close on a compliment. Can I?
Yeah.
Because we talk about, you know, this notion that, like, the young guys have to learn how to, somewhat on the job,
yeah,
how to survive, A, the length of the season, the grind of the season, but also the adjustments that will be made to them through the season. How about Matt Adams?
Yeah.
How about what, I mean, if you want to see a young player who has embraced everything off the field, to get ready to play on the field, to improve himself, and not only maintain what he's had, but improve what he's had. Matt Adams is having a tremendous season. He's one of the best defensive first basemen in the National League.
He sure is.
He's made himself into that. He has maintained his strength and maintained his conditioning and his weight, something that he talked about was going to be something that he really had to focus on this season. Improved his approach, came back healthy, and also was able to keep up with the adjustments being made against him, so he maintained his average until he could get to a point where he could also start hitting for power. That's what a young guy at his best. There's all these celebrations about guys' talent and how they do naturally and how they look naturally and all the tools they might potentially have. How about a moment for all the success and tools that Matt Adams does have?
No question about it. No question. We like the big fella very much. But this is what, his third year?
Second season, first time as a full player.
But third season that he's been in the majors?
That he's had a couple calls. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
Well, it's a very good point.
You know, but again, not to detract from him. I'm just saying, I do admire him very, very much. It's been a real highlight, but it takes some time. Derek, we've kept you long enough. I've kept myself long enough. This was good. I got excited by a lot of things. So, some good talk there. I think we threw it out there on the table, some of the issues.
We didn't even touch about the World Series rematch and Joe Kelly coming home and Craig.
It'll be fun. That's all we need to say. It'll be fun to see what happens. We can talk about it after the fact. That's Derek Gould. I'm Bernie Miklas. Thank you for your patience and waiting for the latest episode of the best podcast in baseball. We got a lot of text messages. You know, I should meant to say Twitter messages and emails. When's it coming back? Well, it's back. And we'll try to get on a more regular schedule. Couldn't be helped. We really appreciate your support. Thank you very much for that. I'm Bernie and Derek. We'll say goodbye for now on the best podcast in baseball.
Thanks.